20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things green and gold. My name is Mike Willen. Alongside me, Tyler Grzegorek, as always on this Sunday, as we start to wrap up the NFL Combine. It is now officially draft season. The top prospects have all gotten their workouts in. We've had some crazy results. We'll be taking a focus on some of the wide receiver numbers and whether they have moved up past 30, whether some will be back there at 30. Maybe some guys have climbed back up in toward that 30 range. It was an incredible week. Also, Packers linked to some notable free agents as well. There could be some very interesting there. We have news of who the joint practice might be. There's a lot going on as we wrap up this week. And Tyler, what's been sticking out to you so far from Packers news this week?
The thing that really sticks out to me the most is that the Packers are going to get involved in free agency once again. And we can talk about whether or not that's smart, but I think that that's the thing that I'm taking away from this week. The offseason plan is becoming clearer and clearer with every passing day. So I think the Packers are going to once again get active in free agency.
Absolutely. So we'll just dive in with that again. Don't forget as well, follow Pack-A-Day Podcast wherever fine podcasts can be found, as well as on Twitter at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Looking toward free agency when it starts in a few weeks, I know the guy talked about it yesterday. The Packers have been linked to Austin Hooper. There's talks they've been linked to Joe Schobert and Nick Kwiatkowski. It's widely assumed Blake Martinez is gone. Sounds the same with Kyler Fackrell, who sounds like he's going to take a one-year prove-it deal somewhere else to try and bank in 2021 on big money. And they haven't talked to Brian Bulaga's agent yet, which is a little concerning. But with some of these free agents, Kwiatkowski, I don't think he's going to cost very much because he wasn't really a starter in Chicago. But he could be one of those Quan Alexander-type guys. But then Schobert's probably going to cost a decent amount because he had some eye-popping numbers, even though the underlying stuff doesn't quite show it. And Hooper's going to cost quite the penny. If you thought Jimmy Graham got paid, wait till you see what the contract Austin Hooper gets. But Tyler, are any of those three, are they wise investments for how much they're going to cost for the Packers?
You know, with Austin Hooper, I don't think he's going to cost as much as we think. Jimmy Graham's already making $9 million a year, so I think that his time in Green Bay is over. Obviously they're going to bring in a guy like Hooper. It has to be. They won't be able to afford both of them. So, you know, you take Jimmy's contract and unfortunately move him from the team and then add Hooper and maybe a couple million. I think you can get Hooper for $11 million. I think that was around the asking price that he was going to see. I think that for $11 million, you know, a 3 or 4 year deal, I really like it. It aligns with the direction of this team. It aligns with what they need. It's really kind of saying, here, Aaron, here's all the tools you're going to need for your last hurrah. And, just giving him help to really be the quarterback that we know that Aaron Rodgers can be. Now, on that same coin, losing Brian Bulaga does not help that either. So it's really kind of a pick your poison type thing. I still feel like Bulaga is going to be back in Green Bay in 2020. It is a little concerning that they haven't met with the agent yet and they haven't really talked anything or talked about any of the contract details. But, you know, I still feel like Bulaga is going to be back. With Schobert, you know, I'm not willing to pay big money for him. If you're going to pay Schobert, you might as well pay Martinez. That's just how I feel about that. I don't think it's a significant upgrade from Martinez to Schobert. Schobert maybe is a little bit better in pass coverage, but not enough to warrant the $10 million a year that he'll likely get. Kwiatkowski is an interesting one, though. Obviously, he's played with the Bears for the last couple of years. I think he's a guy that you can bring in as your linebacker too. Considering that Pettine is playing less and less of two linebacker sets, I'm perfectly okay with just a veteran guy who can kind of do it all, maybe above average do it all. So Kwiatkowski would definitely be a guy that I'd look to kind of just supplement the position. And you still have guys like Oren Burks on the roster. So you can go and draft a guy with some good draft capital, go draft a guy, and then throw a guy like Kwiatkowski in there to really supplement the position. So all three of them, I think, are good options. Schobert is probably the least attractive to me of the three names. But
yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. I don't know how to feel about either of the two linebackers because Kwiatkowski's still kind of unproven as a middle linebacker on a defensive lineup. Schobert, I think, is a little more proven, and he has a knack of being around the ball. But like you said, if for that price, he might as well just bring back Martinez since he already knows Pettine's scheme and knows all that stuff as well. Hooper is interesting because he is going to get paid. He's going to get the biggest. He'll be the highest paid tight end in the NFL going into next year. But he does have that experience with Matt LaFleur. He's played in the NFC, which so he's played a lot of the common opponents, so he knows how to work against some of those guys. And I think a duo of Hooper and Sternberger is a serious receiving threat to help spread this offense out a little bit. They can bring back Mercedes Lewis to be kind of an inline guy as well to help out. I think that's a great trio to have, and it's such a massive improvement over the last couple of years. And I think it'll only help this offense. But again, it's all going to come down to price, and it's going to be one of those things where if you get into a very expensive bidding war, that's a dangerous proposition for Hooper, who's a good tight end, but he's probably not in that Travis Kelce range.
Yeah, no. And Hooper's a great – He's a good tight end because he can block. He's a great receiving option over the middle. He was a big play threat for Atlanta. So I think he's only 25. You'd be getting him for his athletic prime, 25, 26, 27, 28. You know, I'm assuming a four-year deal. I don't think you'd do much longer than that. He's no Kelce. He's no Kittle, but his presence alone and the threat that he provides as a blocker and as a receiver would automatically boost this offense and what this offense can do. And I really think that the ticket here, rather than going out and spending big on a receiver, is spending big on the tight end position and then allowing LaFleur to get that balance that he's so sought over the last year and adding that wide receiver talent in the draft, So you can go into the draft and then find the type of receiver that you want to add. So I think that Hooper and a high round selection of a wide receiver is really what should and maybe needs to happen for this Packers offense.
Absolutely. And we'll be getting into that in just a couple of minutes. But before we get that, it was broken Saturday afternoon that it sounds like the Packers will be hosting the Cleveland Browns in Green Bay for some joint training camp practices this summer. We saw that with Houston this past summer, and it was very interesting to say the least after Jay Sternberger got knocked the bleep out by Lonnie Johnson during a training camp practice. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers was not very happy with that, but Coach Matt LaFleur really seems to like this idea, and it is interesting to have another opponent come in. It kind of helps your own guys kind of not go after each other during practices as much. But with Cleveland, it was such a team full of personalities and a new coaching staff and everything. That's an interesting group to be welcoming into Lambeau. Tyler, what are your thoughts on the Cleveland Browns and seeing Baker Mayfield on the same field with Aaron Rodgers right now?
I mean, I love it. You know, there's talks of Myles Garrett, and I don't think Garrett is being fairly labeled right now, but the Browns are a very talented football team, regardless of how they performed last year. That roster is stupid talented. And so to put that amount of talent into a training camp session, into a practice session, obviously probably a scrimmage at some point, and really have the talent to evaluate your talent, then, you know, it's going to be a great opportunity for LaFleur and his staff to get a good evaluation of the team going into training camp in the preseason and then the regular season.
No, I agree. I can't wait to see the drills between Jaire Alexander and Jarvis Landry or Kevin King and OBJ. That's going to be some fun stuff to watch. Seeing Kenny Clark go up one-on-one with J.C. Treader for one also could be a lot of fun. I think it's a good team to bring in and match up with. Myles Garrett and David Bakhtiari is going to be some of the best one-on-one pass rush drills you're going to see. Those are going to be some of the most entertaining moments of practice I think we'll have seen in years up at Don Hudson Field and Clark Hinkle Field. I think it's a good idea. I love doing these practices. It's good for the – I think it's fun for fans to watch it. I think the players like it for the most part. And I think this fall we're going to see more and more and more of that league-wide, not just up here in Green Bay.
Yeah, and there's inevitably going to be connections back to – when the Texans were in town. And like you said, the Lonnie Johnson thing with Jay Sternberger, and then also Rodgers' comments about special teams. You know, infamously one of the first times that national media tried to make it about LaFleur and Rodgers' relationship, and Rodgers, you know, talking smack about LaFleur, basically passive aggressively and all this other stuff. And so we'll see also if LaFleur does take Rodgers' advice and kind of eliminate some of the special team stuff from the practice, because I mean, that's the whole direction of the NFL right now, is to reduce those types of interactions between the players. So we'll see if LaFleur makes any changes this time around.
Absolutely. So with that stuff out of the way, let's move on to the NFL Combine. Of course, Indianapolis has been busy this week with about 300 of the top players in college football testing out, working out, and meeting with teams. Packers have met with a lot of linebackers and a lot of wide receivers. And just taking a look at some of the receivers, because linebackers kind of solidified itself, and as of a recording of this, we haven't gotten to the linebackers on-field stuff yet. But the receivers had some insane numbers that they put up on the field. Just absolutely bonkers. And just kind of looking at the top 75, according to the Draft Network, I'd say let's make it top 80 to include Denzel Mims, because he had a really good combine as well. It was a very interesting group for the wide receivers. And Tyler, from what you've seen, from what you've read about, are there some guys who had been talked to at about the end of that first round who have jumped even further ahead that may now no longer be around at 30?
You know, I'm not sure how much of an opportunity there would have been for Ruggs to be there at 30, but I think he's solidified himself as probably the wide receiver 2A or 2B, if you want to include Judy there. So he's one of the top three wide receivers now, undoubtedly. And I think Lamb is the first to go. Judy not too far after him, if not Ruggs. I think it's a worthy conversation to talk about the possibility of Ruggs being taken before Judy. But I think that with his performance and his validation of what you see on tape with Ruggs, I think he's cemented himself as a top 20, top 25 pick in the upcoming draft. So he's one of those guys. Justin Jefferson, he's a guy who's really vaulted into probably being a late first round pick now with his performance, because he drastically outperformed what people thought he would. So Justin Jefferson's a guy that the Packers could probably consider at 30 and nobody would bat an eye. I still think he's a second round receiver, probably early second round kind of guy. I think that's where his value best fits, but his testing was out of the elevated his stock. Because he just tested so well, especially running in the mid 4.4s at this 40. That was fantastic. And then Donovan Peoples-Jones. So Donovan Peoples-Jones is probably the biggest mover out of all these guys. And he's a guy who suffered in his tape analysis because of Shea Patterson in the Michigan offense. It was pretty lethargic, and honestly, he suffered. And so Donovan Peoples-Jones is a guy who could sneakily be taken in probably the second round, back end of the first. He's a young dude still. I think he's only 21. You know, stupid athletic, 6'4". I don't know his 40 time, but it was good. I think it was under 4.5, and his vert was like almost, it was like 44 inches or something like that.
44 and a half for the vertical.
So, like, you know, he's jumping over me standing up, like, which is pretty freaking nuts. Pretty crazy. So, I don't know. Those are probably the three guys who had their stock raised the most this weekend, or this week, not this weekend, but they're the three guys who could possibly jump up into the late first. And I think Lamb and Judy and Ruggs are the only ones that we could definitively probably say that are not going to be there at 30. Ruggs would probably be the only one of that group who would make it to 30, but those are probably the three.
Yeah, I agree. I think Ruggs with that 4.27 has jumped himself into the probably maybe top 15, because NFL, they love speed, and he's got plenty of it. I think Jalen Reagor is another one who's kind of vaulted a little bit. He ran a 4.47. He looked pretty sharp. And Donovan Peoples-Jones has been one of my draft crushes now for ever since he declared. I agree with you. He was victimized by the Michigan quarterback play, and because you watch over and over again, you see him get open deep, and he has to sit there and wait for a throw that either doesn't get there or is so underthrown that the corner gets there right when the ball does. And throwing the fact that he can return punts, he can jump through the roof, and I would love him to drop to 62. I feel like that would be spectacular. I don't think it'll happen, but he's a guy where another young guy, much like Rashawn Gary was and Kenny Clark was, they came in at 20 and 21 years old. All the talent in the world, and I think he's a guy who's really helped himself. And then another guy who I think has helped himself was Chase Claypool. Claypool, at his size, running 4.42 and just putting up these absurd numbers at the combine. At 6'4", 238, jumped 40 and a half inches, broad jumped 126. He really helped himself. I think he's one of two guys at that size to run that fast. The other one is Calvin Johnson. So while he won't be a first-round pick, he's only helping himself. Over, I do think T. Higgins not running or not doing one of the workouts, I think, hurt him a little bit. Chenault was kind of all right, so kind of that tweener guy. Brandon Ayuk was solid. And the last guy I kind of want to talk about is Denzel Mims from Baylor. He had a big Senior Bowl. He was one of the dominant players there. He was torching corners left and right. And then he comes in and has a really, really nice combine. Ends up running a 4.38, as well as a 38-inch vertical, the fastest three cone at 6'3", 207. Is he a guy you'd consider at 62?
I think, yeah, I think at the back end of the second, I think it's a good place for a guy like that. Because, you know, when I first watched Denzel Mims, I just wasn't the biggest fan. I'm still not the biggest fan. Obviously, he tested out of the water, and he is going to be a pick that is clamored for by a lot of fan bases. But I think that 62 is a great value, and I think that this kind of leads us into the next part of this discussion. Is should the Packers even spend their first-round pick on a wide receiver at this point? I think that there's just so many options in the second round. Maybe this is a trade-out year. You let one of these teams try to trade back up into the first to get their quarterback or something like that, or you even take a quarterback if they're sitting there and it's great value. But let's not get into that too much. You know, I think this is a trade-out year, and there's great value in the second round, I think, this year. And this is where you really want to get – where you want to make your money, because even at linebacker, offensive tackle, it's kind of top-heavy, but there's still good talent throughout the class. Defensive line, there's going to be good talent in the second and third rounds. Corner, there's going to be great talent. Safety, there's going to be good talent in the second round. The second and the third rounds of this draft is where I think the teams need to capitalize. Obviously, you always need to hit on your first round picks, but I think, like, unlike any other year, you can really make your name in that second and third round, and the Packers are no exception to that. They only have two picks, I would say 30 and 62, that I would consider impactful, because once you get to the back end of the third, generally that's when it starts to get slim pickings. But, you know, maybe they can capitalize, trade back a little bit, maybe move around the board a little bit, and be aggressive and walk away with some talented players at positions of need, because there will certainly be some guys available when they get on the clock at 30.
No, I agree. And I agree with you at that point. I don't think they're going to take a receiver in the first. I think just because I think money, but I think doing that trade down like they did when they got Jordy Nelson, I think is smart. Because there's going to be teams who are going to want to catch some of these rising quarterbacks. Whether if Jordan Love starts dropping, some teams are going to jump up and get him. Some team might want to go and get Jacob Eason if he continues to throw like he's been doing it during workouts. Guys like that, if Tua were to fall, things you never know. I think there's things where people will want to move up into the end of the first round, like we saw the Ravens do with Lamar Jackson. We saw the Vikings do with Bridgewater all those years ago. So I think a trade down is smart, unless one of those top middle linebackers is there, Queen or Murray. I think if one of those guys is there, I think Brian Gutekunst will pull the trigger to try and get one of those guys. But otherwise, I think we'll see a trade down. And like you said, round two and round three is going to be where the money's made in this draft. That's where you're going to see a lot of these receivers will go. A lot of these defensive linemen, offensive linemen will drop. And because you're right, the offensive line group is pretty top heavy. And There was talk until Friday night about maybe Tristan Wirfs was going to start to drop a little bit, but then he basically became Superman at Indianapolis, and that's not going to happen anymore. So, yeah, offensive tackle is going to be a little tougher at the end of the first round, but defensive line is going to be big in the mid-rounds. Receiver will be big in the mid-rounds. Linebacker could be all right in the mid-rounds if someone like Zach Bond were to drop. So I think a trade-out is a smart move right now, if depending on how much you're going to get for that pick. If the Packers can get a second and a fourth, or a second and a third for that pick 30, I think you snap it up right away.
No, I completely agree, and I'm actually about to look up the trade details from when they traded down and then selected Kevin King, because it would be a comparable package, I would assume. Let's see here.
First, they got the first pick in round 2 and 4, I think, because it was
right. That's what I was thinking. It was a fourth round pick, so you know play into what we were talking about with getting as many picks as you could in the second and third round. However, if you do get that fourth round pick, you can trade back into the third or late second, you know, and still get a guy that you're really looking for. Let's see here. Yeah, so
plus that fourth round pick was the very first pick on day 3. So then you had all night to think about which player you wanted to. You had that entire Saturday, the entire Friday night. Teams might want to trade for that, so you could trade up using that pick. So like that pick's kind of in a weird spot as far as how trade value works. But
no, I completely agree. It is. It's because at the end of the first round, the only teams that are really going to truly value that pick are the ones who need a quarterback. Maybe if somebody views a defensive end prospect as that impactful, just to save the money for that extra year. But I mean, if a defensive end prospect is that impactful, they're likely being taken in the top 10, whereas quarterbacks can be a little bit more project-based. And so obviously we saw it with Lamar Jackson, and he sat for a year, and that paid off for Baltimore. The Chiefs were a little bit more aggressive when they traded up for Mahomes and then let him sit for a year. I think they traded up to 15 to get Mahomes, if I remember correctly. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see. I think it's too early to tell or even predict or try to predict or even speculate what the Packers are going to do at 30, simply because we still have an entire free agency period to go through here in a couple weeks. And if they take Hooper or if they go out and get a receiver, maybe they're not talking about receiver at 30 anymore, and maybe their needs become a lot clearer. Maybe they bring back Bulaga and they don't need to talk about a tackle in the first round anymore. You know, so all these things that still need to happen before we can really begin to accurately speculate what the Packers are going to do with their, I would actually call it limited top 3 selections this year. So we'll see what they decide to do. But you know, as of right now, their options are certainly open.
Absolutely. And it's always fun to speculate here as I'm currently watching the combine on mute as we're recording this. But I guess the last thing before we sign off, can we give some big props to Jonathan Taylor for Wisconsin, since the guy runs a 4.39 at 226 pounds. That's fast, and that's scary.
Yeah, no, it's I think it's Saquon Barkley levels of testing, honestly, in terms of the athletic prowess that he's showing there. Who cares about the 17 bench reps? I certainly don't. Everything else, he looked fantastic, and you know, the tape matches. The biggest knock on Jonathan Taylor right now, which might knock him down into the second round, is the tread on his tires. So you know, we can talk about how that affects him moving forward, but you know, that's really his only big negative. Everything else kind of is there's a check in the box. So Jonathan Taylor is going to be interesting one to watch as we get closer to draft.
Absolutely. So as we wrap, there's another guy that could be a trade-up spot too. But so last thing as we wrap things up, and this is very specifically for Jacob Westendorf, if you're listening, all I need is 3 letters on day 2 of the draft, and that's DPJ, Donovan Peoples-Jones. So that being said, Tyler, what are you looking forward to? What are you working on, and where can people find you?
Well, I'm looking forward to free agency because I feel like there's going to be a lot of movement in the Green Bay roster. Both players leaving and both players coming back. Hopefully we see Bulaga come back, and then hopefully we get a hopefully we get a notification on our phones that Austin Hooper is going to be wearing green and gold in 2020, because I think that'd be fantastic. But what I'm working on, I'm still over at Dynasty Nerds, putting out some content over there, taking a back seat right now because I'm working on the draft guide for Cheesehead TV, writing about the defensive line. So be sure to check that out when pre-orders come out in a couple weeks. And then, I'm just around otherwise, just kind of keeping my eyes open and acquiring information as always. So you can find me on Twitter at Tyler_Grez, TYLER_GREZ.
Sounds good. And you can find me on Twitter at Mike Quinlan. I'm writing for Dairyland Express. I've done some combine stuff. I'll be doing some more draft stuff shortly as well. We did a competing three-round mock draft with Paul Brettel and another one of our writers as well, to try and figure out how to balance these three picks for the Packers in the first three rounds. So stay tuned for that and look for more Dairyland Express stuff. And, of course, check back tomorrow for more Packers talk on the Pack-A-Day podcast. Again, find it wherever good podcasts are found, whether it's iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Spotify, Stitcher. We are there. And follow us on Twitter at Pack-A-Day Podcast and all of our great contributors as well. So for Tyler Grzegorek, this is Mike Whalen saying so long for now. We'll talk to you guys next Sunday, but there will be more Pack-A-Day Podcasts on tomorrow as well. And of course, go Pack, go.